Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to another exciting episode of Let Me In. I'm using my smooth voice today because I have kind of a sore throat. So, but this episode we're having this week. I'm also being joined by Fleetwood Mac and Chris Logie. We're having kind of a small crowd tonight. Originally, we were going to be doing the show on the 21st, Friday. As you'll probably notice, we're recording this on the 22nd. The reason is because last night, Phil's neck of the woods got hit with some severe weather that eventually got into a full-on tornado warning. So,
yeah, it was exciting. turned out, well, like, the tornadoes hit just north and south of us, so it kind of missed us. So, but we still got a crap ton of rain and like some pretty strong winds. So,
yeah.
It made the night interesting. I'll say that much.
Yeah. See, I've been through so many of those that it just kind of you kind of grow dull to it after a while.
Yeah. Well, you're in Georgia. You see those a lot more often than we do.
Yeah. Yeah, we're finally getting around. We're going to be doing the show tonight. Of course, we'll still be doing Day Zero Update tomorrow. Of course, we're going to be talking about a certain gaming company that pretty much shut its doors this week then. Mm-hmm. But that's for tomorrow. Tonight, we're talking about, well, the current hearings over nominating Judge Brett Kavanaugh for Supreme Court Justice and how that went completely off the rails this week.
That was basically the story that just took a shit all over the week.
Yeah.
Just spreading it out every single day.
Yeah, like, we would like to think that there would be more involved, but that's pretty much the big one for this week. It was pretty much the only thing anyone gave a crap about. But, I mean, there was other stuff that happened, too. For example, the Coca-Cola company is experimenting with a cannabis-infused drink. We're going to be talking about that. We also now have information about Amazon. They're getting ready to bring out a whole bunch of Alexa-enabled crap that probably most of us will never use. But
yeah, we'll
Jeff Bezos can take the hit, so what the hell. also, we've got some exciting archaeological discoveries in Egypt. We got a bunch of trailers and previews for film and television we'll be talking about, including at least one or two I'm pretty excited about. Yeah. And as far as, like, Supreme Court controversies go in Canada, theirs is much less, shall we say, intense. But, we'll be getting around to all that and more on this episode of Let's Weekend. So, as always, we'll start off. Phil, what were you up to this week?
So I've been...
Avoiding, the flying moose that were being taken around by tornado winds.
Yeah. Luckily, none of them hit my apartment, so that's good.
Yeah.
Moose aren't so bad. You really got to watch out for the caribou, though.
I've been told the moose are pretty... pretty chill most of the time. But caribou will actively run your ass down if they see you.
Yeah. Other than that, I've gotten back into my routine of, like, listening to audiobooks now that I got my book player repaired, so
that's fun.
So I'm listening to Dune, the original from,
68, yeah. I think. Produced by a New Age self-help publisher company when it first came out.
Doesn't really seem to fit with that label, but okay.
Well, he convinced them to do it, and it ended up being a massive seller.
It sold like bazillions, and this is actually the first time I've ever actually read the novel.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Damn, I read that in high school.
Yeah, I missed it in high school because it was like big, and then I was lazy.
It's a fairly thick piece of literature. Yeah. I won't lie.
Yeah. I'm actually kind of enjoying it. It's definitely a product of its time. You can definitely tell it was written in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. So
You can, although I will point out, at least an eighth of that length is actually the supplementary materials in the appendix.
Yeah.
Where he gives you, like, the timeline and the glossary and stuff. So.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure if they actually read all of that in the audiobook. I guess I'll find out when I get to the end. So.
Yeah.
We'll see. So, yeah, that was that. And apart from that, I've been continuing my trek through the Shining Force games.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm pretty much done with Shining Force CD, and I've got a couple of battles left, so I started on the GBA version of Shining Force 1,
mm-hmm.
Which is a completely different game, and a lot better than I expected it to be.
Mm.
Yeah, it's definitely a remake. They've done a lot of quality of life stuff in there, like letting you buy multiples of items now, which is... something you couldn't do in the original. You'd have to buy everything one by one by one, and you now have an item store box, so
mm-hmm.
yeah, that makes things a lot easier for item management. Visuals are nicer, the soundtrack is nicer, the story is rewritten, so that was I'd already known about that, and I just didn't know how extensive that was. Your character actually has dialogue in this one, which isn't in the original.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And what else? And there's a collectible card game in there, apparently.
Oh, wow. I didn't know there were the Shining Force CCG.
Yeah, apparently that's a thing. I'm really, really enjoying that game, and I expect I will be spending a lot more time with it over the next few days. So
mm-hmm.
there's that. And also, I watched the last two Avengers movies, Age of Ultron, which was good.
Yeah.
And Infinity War, which was outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think at this point everybody knows what happens in that movie, so...
I don't feel so good.
Yeah. So, Thanos, though, yeah, he's definitely a character.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently also dead now, so...
Oh, yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah, that's the big problem with some of these movies. When they do these big crossovers at this point, is they kind of write themselves into a corner.
Yeah.
So it's like, how the hell are they going to get out of this one?
Yeah. Well, we'll find out because, as with the Captain Marvel that we'll be talking about later,
mm-hmm.
it looks like they're starting to undo some of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be good. But I'm really enjoying it now that I've, watched all the main pillar movies, I can kind of just start filling in the rest of the stuff at my leisure.
Mm-hmm.
So, over the next few weeks, I'll probably just watch Deadpool 2 and all the other stuff that I need to catch up on. Marvel.
Yeah.
You make good stuff. And now you may actually get to do X-Men properly, so that's good.
Yep.
So, that's kind of been it for me. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, so I got a chance to watch Maniac, which is the new Netflix series that stars Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, directed by the guy who did True Detective Season 1.
Okay.
He's now going to be doing the new Bond movie.
Hmm.
I forget what his name is. I got to watch the first two episodes, which are kind of both the same thing. It's just you see Jonah Hill's side and you see Emma's side in the other episode, sort of how they get into this.
Okay.
Weird program. This weird like drug testing program.
Yep.
So far it's been pretty good. No real humor to it or anything. Jonah Hill is a guy who is very mentally disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a psychosis. Very much not have a great grip on reality. Sort of decides to go take on this testing program. Potentially could help him. But also weird thing is trying to figure out when this is set, because it's kind of futuristic,
mm-hmm.
but then it may not be. I don't know, it seems kind of like retro futuristic,
mm.
so I'm not sure if it's like set in like the 80s or 90s, but because there's some weird stuff to it. So like Jonah Hill's character goes to get on the subway, doesn't have the money for it, and so they offer him this option of Ad Buddy, which means he gets a buddy to go with him on the train who just reads ads to him. He has like a big giant suitcase full of these things. Gives him the pamphlets, like one's like rent a wife.
Mm.
It's like some weird ass shit. But Jonah Hill's character is like, you know, this is what I'm going to do next. I'm just going to go hop from woman to woman and live with live in a new place every, you know, few months or whatever it is. It's like, oh, this is a weird thing. But then there's also like robots that clean up like the dog shit on the sidewalks.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're basically like little trash cans that just drives over the poop, sucks it up, and then sprays like sanitizer or something.
Like over those security robots that tried to kill themselves by drowning themselves in a fountain.
It's more like small dog sized.
Ah.
Yeah. And Emma Stone like tapes a missing dog pamphlet on her on one of those. But then Jonah Hill's like during some parts like seems like he's getting coded messaging hidden in different places. He finds it like in his works bathroom. Like tears off the toilet's paper dispenser. And there's like a message right behind it. It's like, there's some weird shit going on. I'm curious to see how this all pans out. Whether he's like really crazy or if there's like a Matrix thing going on where it's like, oh no, there's actually something else here.
Mm.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. I look forward to watching some more of that. As for games, I'm continuing to play more Dragon Quest XI. I finished up the Sand Kingdom, at least the story stuff. I'm trying to do a quest, trying to finish up the two quests I got there. One of which requires me to get three of my party members pepped up to do a move on a specific enemy. And I stupidly got them all pepped up and didn't do it on the enemy. Just brain farted because I did not pay attention to what the move was. Because it made it seem like the quest, like you had to kill him with that move. And I was like, well, I'll get him close to being dead, then I'll do it. And then one person got unpepped. I was like, well, fuck. So I don't. Then I tried just taking on enemies and getting them back up and pepped, but couldn't get all three at the same time. So I made the revert back to the save I had before I started, and hope that I can get that going again and do it. But yeah, I got a fifth member, so I got the trying to figure out who I actually want in my party. But so far, I'm going to keep the first four because the new guy is very much an offensive attacker, and I kind of like having two. I essentially have like a warrior, a thief, a black mage, and like a white mage, essentially right now. And he would be probably some sort of warrior. I don't know what sort of archetype it might be. But yeah, that so far has been just fun to play. I also got into Destiny 2 Forsaken to see what that is all about, and there's a lot of shit there. I have not started up the actual missions yet, just kind of seeing what all is new. So they added two new sections to the character screen. One is for your, it's for collections of loot. So like the different items that are of the same sort of outfit for the armor and such, and as well as like here's all the legendary weapons, that sort of stuff. It keeps track of all that stuff, and I assume it makes it easier for you to figure out, oh, I want this thing. It drops in, you know, these strikes. Like I should go do strikes then, see if I can get it to drop, that sort of stuff. Like, stuff that seems very much like a WoW thing. And the other thing they added is Triumphs, which they've done Triumphs before. It's usually been, like, this program you have in your character screen that sort of shows you all these, like, achievements you can do. This sort of keeps track of all of that in one place, as well as, like, stuff from the first Destiny as well as is in this, too. So, like, my entirety of looking at this stuff is, like, fuck, there's like a ton of these I have to go and just redeem just to get the points off of them. It's like there's like different ones for completing each of the DLC campaigns, the main campaigns, the different quests, that sort of stuff, and a bunch for just, you know, maxing out each of the classes, getting all the subclasses, and various like things you can do in multiplayer. Just a lot of stuff is like, you know, do this thing, you know, such and such times, get all the collectibles, all that sort of stuff. Things that just makes it easier to know, like, what's all the shit you can do in this game. Because that's been one of the problems with Destiny and Destiny 2, at least at launch, is, like, what's all the shit that's here? And what all can I do? Because you just see all the icons and you can look at them like, okay, these are strikes, but like what's beyond just playing them once and beating them, like what's all that I can do in those things? And so this is where they kind of house that stuff and make it easier to get a glimpse of what you can do in the game, which is nice. Yeah, and I was working on some of the Curse of Osiris story stuff because I figured before I jump into this thing, I'm going to try out and just finish up the two DLC packs worth of quests before I jump in. So that's what I was doing. And yeah, they did some more stuff with the weapons, sort of changing some of the stuff there. I've not got a chance to really wrap my head around that stuff. Mostly just been bullshitting. There's a lot of like bounties too. That's a thing that was in the original, but now there's like probably 10 different places you can go get bounties for various things. Stuff for like the multiplayer, for the new multiplayer thing. I forget what it's called. Gambit. Some for strikes, for raids, for the campaign stuff, for, you know, patrols and all that, the public event stuff, things like that. It's like, there's just fucking shit ton of this stuff. But, yeah, like, as far as, you know, people wanting, you know, end-game content, this seems like a pretty good means of doing that. 'Cause most of it is sort of daily stuff. It tells me, you know, it expires within a day of when I took it. So I'm going to try and do some of that stuff, hopefully before tomorrow's show. But, yeah, there's just a ton of shit in that game, and I'm still even trying to wrap my head around what all there is, which that's nice. It's nice to have that in an expansion rather than just like, what the fuck's different?
Yeah.
I paid, you know, $40 for this. I don't know what's different, but yeah, I know what's different here. It's pretty simple stuff for the most part. Yeah. It's a lot of like checkpoint stuff. Also played some Diablo 3. Cause they got the new season going on, season 15. They also put in like StarCraft stuff on the consoles versions, cause they had the 20th anniversary thing on Battle.net. And so if you got that stuff, it's now in the console versions as of at least the second to last update. Yeah, the season stuff, I like it. It's just, I kind of wish, I didn't have to play through the campaigns. Over again,
yeah.
Because it's like I've been through that first chapter probably about 10 times now, and I even pulled up a notepad doc to write down like what are these characters, like which ones haven't I done yet? Since like I have 270s, Crusader and a Wizard, and I guess when the season's done, they just dump that character out onto your character list, and so it's like I don't know which one of these are legit characters, which ones are season characters that I don't give a shit about.
Yeah,
it's like, oh god. I deleted a couple because they were level ones, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to bother with a level one. But yeah, I'm doing a barbarian because I don't think I've done much. I had like a level one and a level four, so like, okay, I haven't really played barbarian.
Yeah, barbarians are really boring up until you get to around level 20, and then they're amazing.
Yeah, and I have the difficulty up a bit, so I am like basically doing some attacks, low on health, run away, use a potion, go back, do some more attacks, run away, wait for my cooldown, refill my health, go back. It's like until I can get some loot that actually refills the health automatically.
Yeah,
which I do now, but it's like 6 health. So it's like not very much. So it's a lot of me just like waiting while I'm between encounters. If I don't have a potion to use.
But
it's not great. Like my first character was a Crusader, which I thought was like a perfect class to start with.
Yeah,
because that's a great class. It's magic and offensive stuff, so it's kind of it, and I liken it to Captain America in the Marvel Heroes,
because
that's very much like a throwing your shield against enemies that bounces around, all that sort of stuff. But you also get to cast like some spells and such, which works really well. And I think Wizard's the other one that's really cool because it's more of a distance class. So that's where you can just sort of fuck up mobs before you even get to them. That's always nice.
Yeah.
And yeah, I played a little bit on PC, and I realized I really don't like it too much on PC because it's just a lot of clicking. And if you're not super accurate on the clicking, you're just running your character around like an idiot. And it's like, why don't you guys just put the console version improvements in here? Literally use the controller. Like, it's single player anyway. It's like, who fucking cares? Like, the PC people can use their mouse and keyboard like they want. Like, do it like how you have it with Overwatch, where you can use controllers if you want, or you can use mouse and keyboard. There should be no real issue there. It's just doing the Blizzard thing of making it accessible to everybody. It's like, I've already given the money, just let me make it easier to control this stuff. It's not that it's really con it's hard to control, it's just different. And I just really like the console versions a lot. But yeah, that's been nice. Put a little bit more time into Rocket League. I got the Rocket Pass. Been playing multiplayer with that. Starting to get some wins in ranked. And then running into people that when we're losing, like, this is why I fell out of gold rank. Because of you guys, and it's like, no, it's because you suck, you idiot. And I did that before I quit out of the match at the end. It's like, you suck. Because he's just sitting there complaining. It's like, this is why I'm out of. It's like, no, because you're a whiny piece of shit. Nobody likes you. And I don't like those people.
Nope.
They just want to blame everybody instead of, just shutting up and playing. And also been finding a weird new trend where people, like at the kickoff, usually you have two people run at the ball and one person staying behind at the goal. And so I've been doing the goal for the most part. But finding out instead of the second person going to the ball, they take a right or left right away and go over and get a full boost meter, meaning that there's no backup. So there have been times where I'm one of the two people going, and the goalie decides he's going to go get a boost, and the ball, just in a 50-50 hit, just gets knocked straight back, goes right into the goal, because the goalie just left, because he's an idiot. It's like, you have like, you start with some boost, so you don't need to jump, do it, go get it right away. These people are just too focused on their own benefit, instead of worrying about the split second. Hits like that can cause easy goals to get made. Just dealing with some idiots, but otherwise it's a really fun game still. But yeah, that has been a lot of fun. It's been like the multiplayer game I've been playing a lot lately. And yeah, that's kind of been it. I guess we got the storms that Phil did. Because it was like a big long line of storms just sweeping across the Midwest. But we had just severe thunderstorm warnings from about 6 to 6:30. So I guess about an hour later you got them and they were a little bit more severe.
Oh yeah, they were pretty bad.
Today has been really nice because it's like 60s. It's nice and cool.
Same here.
Go outside and not sweat within seconds. But yeah, that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
As far as weather goes down here, the temperature is supposed to start going down about this time next week. And it'll be more or less hovering around the low 80s, upper 70s. Till winter goes around, I guess. But, so game-wise, I'm still playing Divinity Original Sin 2. In fact, I'm in the last main area. And it is kicking my ass. I've talked before about how difficult this game is, more than a few times. And keep in mind, I'm playing on what's supposed to be the quote-unquote easy difficulty setting. And it still just mutilates me. And the thing is, because you're going up against like these larger group of enemies, now it's not that it's over really fast. It's long and drawn out, which is just the worst feeling in the world. Because you're doing your absolute best, and then it's like victory is almost in sight, and then they pull something out and just absolutely destroy destroy you.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't have it listed here, but I've also started playing Super Mario Odyssey again. Because I haven't touched that in a while, and I figured it was time to go back to it. And I suddenly remembered why I went through that game so fast in the first place.
Because it's freaking awesome.
Because it's amazing and addictive. It's like crack in video game form. Hmm. Yep. I also forgot how utterly bizarre and random that game really is. I mean, Mario games are, by their nature, really bizarre and random. Hmm. But most of the time, with having Mario having been around for 20-something years now, there's like a certain logic, to Mario and his universe that we've kind of sort of come to expect. And then Super Mario Odyssey comes along and completely pulls the rug right out from
us. Yeah.
And just goes all in on the craziness. But yeah, that's a big game, and I'm hoping to, after I finish the main stuff again, I'm going to start taking seriously going out and trying to find the rest of the moons, because I actually stopped after I got to the Mushroom Kingdom last time.
Yeah.
But let's see, other than that, guitar stuff, anime and Netflix. So some of y'all probably know the new season of BoJack came out back on the 14th.
Yep.
And I finally have started watching it in earnest. And holy, that show somehow manages to continue to impress in ways that, I mean, this is its fifth season now. Hmm. And somehow it still manages to really surprise you in ways. And sometimes really experimental ways, because, like, okay, there's this one episode. It's episode, I think it's either episode 5 or 6. It's called Free Churro. And with the exception of the beginning part of the episode, it is entirely just BoJack giving the eulogy at his mother's funeral. And, it's Will Arnett, so... He's literally the only voice in the whole episode, because before then there's this short vignette we get from when BoJack was a kid and his dad's picking him up from soccer practice, and his dad's going on this weird rant about how evil women are and stuff. But he gives his eulogy at his mother's funeral, and it's a showing amazing how good of an actor Will Arnett actually is.
Hmm.
Because he somehow manages to go through like all 5 stages of grief in a manner of like 20 minutes, and then bounce between all of them quite at random. Then in the end, he finds out that it's actually not even the right funeral.
Okay.
Because that it gets really maudlin towards the end of the episode, and then that reveal is at the end, and it's like, oh, right, this is supposed to be a comedy.
Is there an animated show you would compare that to? Like, as far as give me an idea of what to expect from it?
I really can't.
Okay, it's not like a King of the Hill or Family Guy.
No, it's not like King of the Hill. It's
Futurama,
not like
or
Family
anything
Guy.
Like that?
No, because unlike...
Adult Swim stuff?
No, because unlike a lot of those shows, BoJack actually, for one thing, has continuity. And another thing, it actively deconstructs a lot of the sort of typical tropes that are associated with this kind of show. Like the has-been and the unemployed carefree best friend and all this stuff. It's a show that at both times is really funny and at the same time really sad at the same time. Mm. But you actively have to watch it to really get what I mean.
Yeah. Okay.
But, and as far as like, and I did finally start watching American Vandal.
You in season 1?
Yeah, season 1.
Okay. That season's really funny.
Yeah, it is. It's amazing how they took, like, just the dumbest idea and somehow managed to take it into a genuinely gripping mystery.
Yeah, somehow. It's a very silly subject, but they take it so seriously, it's hilarious.
That you can't help but get drawn into it. Because the whole thing is literally about, like, okay, who is it that at this time during assembly day, this guy, one of the guys at this high school goes out and paints dicks all over the teacher's cars in the parking lot.
And then they're analyzing the dick drawings.
Yeah.
With other dick drawings.
His, you know, because he's apparently a constant dick drawer, and then finding out that the style of the dick drawings are completely different.
Yeah.
And then it goes into stuff like, you know, can he be trusted because he claims he got a hand job from what's-her-name during summer camp? And then they actively go over to the camp and try to, like, sort of reconstruct the whole event. It's beyond stupid, but it somehow, it works somehow. Yep. I don't know. As for anime, I've been enjoying my Funimation subscription. I started watching some old 90s anime. How many of you guys remember Armitage 3 or Armitage the 3rd? It was like one of those cyberpunk anime that came out like before Ghost in the Shell. It's very kind. It's like it's in between that sort of midpoint between Ghost in the Shell and Bubblegum Crisis.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. And it's basically about this Martian colony. That's like this massive metropolitan Martian colony and the sort of controversy over the existence of robots, how the robots are becoming more human-like, and there's like this active anti-robot movement, and there's like the very first episode is about this terrorist who goes around assassinating suspected robot people. It's really like old school. Like if you can think of like what anime was like in the early 90s, it's like that.
Hmm.
You know, if you can picture it in your head, you've pretty much got it. But you know, so stuff like that. That's pretty much it, really. So anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
Just wanted to say Amazon has confirmed that my order for Steve Perry's Traces is shipping.
Yeah, so. I've already got it preloaded on iTunes. So,
can't wait.
But have you had a chance to listen to the other songs he's put up on YouTube?
I listened to No Erasin', and then I deliberately decided that I wasn't going to listen to anything else until I got the album.
Yeah. He does actually manage to get up to the old Steve Perry falsetto and the more recent one.
Yeah.
It's for a fairly short time, but he's still got it. All right then. Well, I guess with that, it's time to get to everybody's favorite part of the show, which is Brandon's random factoid. So quick question, as we're all kind of sort of Japanophiles, in Japan, you know, when we Westerners look at Japan and their media, we realize that sort of what they consider taboo doesn't exactly line up with what we consider to be taboo, right?
Right.
Like things like, you know, like, for example, nudity or poop jokes, stuff, you know, like the stuff that shows up in their children's programming that would never show up in ours.
Right.
But Japan does have like a handful of taboos that when Westerners look at it can seem to be completely inexplicable. I mean, we're in 2018 now, and yet some of this stuff is like something that you'd expect in a feudal society, which, you know, if you look at it objectively, there's still bits of that in Japanese society.
Yeah.
And do you know what the biggest taboo of all of them is?
Nope.
The imperial family.
Okay.
The emperor.
Hmm.
You don't talk about, you don't make fun of the emperor, you don't make fun of the emperor's family.
Hmm.
That is like a big no-no for a lot of people. Especially if it's like, you know, for like those hard right wing nationalist types.
Yeah.
You know, they're called, I think in Japan they're called Yoku Dantai. They're the guys that drive around in those big black trucks with the slogans painted on the side of them and the big speakers on them. Those, you've seen them before, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They're like a,
has their equivalent.
Yeah, but they're not quite as, shall we say, noisy.
Hmm.
And also considering that this is Japan we're talking about, it's pretty outstanding because most Japanese basically consider those things to be a nuisance at best. But the reason I bring up the so-called emperor taboo, the emperor taboo, is because it's basically the whole thing is so taboo that even in within like the last 50 years, it's actually gotten people killed over it. And I'm going to talk about that tonight. So sometime back, you guys may remember I talked about Yukio Mishima and when he went up to the headquarters of the Self-Defense Force, and I think it was Tokyo, and he was attempting to start an imperial coup d'etat and failed, and then he went inside and committed seppuku.
Mm-hmm.
He had like a second behind him to cut off his head.
Yeah.
Well, that happened, believe it or not, that was actually a sort of cap off of what at that point had been a decade of, really since World War II, pretty unprecedented levels of political violence in Japan. So some of you may know in 1962, it was 1960, it may have been the late 50s, the Japanese Diet signed a military treaty with the U.S. Army. Some of y'all may know that's why in Japan you have so many like military bases that are just ubiquitous over there. And it was pretty controversial in and of itself, because apparently, in order for it to work, for it to happen, the prime minister at the time actually locked a lot of the opposition members in the Japanese Diet out of the Diet building when they cast the vote. So it's generally considered that the whole thing was done through a deal of political dirty tricks, basically.
Right.
And then right around 1960, that politician, I'm trying to remember what his name was. Let's see if I can remember. Inajiro Asanuma. He was a politician for the Japan Socialist Party, and he was killed in a very public televised assassination in 1960. When a 17-year-old rushed up on stage with one of those short cane swords and basically stabbed him in the abdomen. And the incident I'm about to talk about actually happened 2 years after that. It was 1962. It was 1962. It was 1961. Sorry, it was 1961. An author by the name of Shichiro Fukuzawa, who is actually, along with Mishima, probably my favorite like literary author from Japan. He was also, I like him because both he had like a very satirical edge to his work, and also because he was also a guitarist. So he was a writer and a professional guitarist, so, you know. He wrote a story that called Furyu Mutan, which in English can be translated into things like the story of a dream of courtly elegance or dream of red flowers. It's kind of you know how Japanese has it where it's like, you know, it has puns that you can do with the words and interpret them in different ways.
Yeah.
But basically the story is about a guy who is looking for his missing pocket watch, and he gets frustrated, so he decides to take a nap. And while he's taking a nap, he has a dream of when as he's getting up, a popular uprising happens in Japan, and a bunch of leftist radicals storm the royal palace and cut off the heads of the imperial family. Now, it's never actually said exactly, specifically, that's who they are, but it's interpreted that the ones that get their to get their heads off are Crown Prince Akihito and Princess Michiko. It was published in Chuokron, which is actually still around. It's Chuokron. It's actually English Central Review. As a monthly literary magazine that's been published for well over 50 years. And when that story was published, it caused a massive, I mean massive, controversy. Because, again, this was happening right around the time when, you know, the U.S. and, you know, Japan were having their military treaty and everything. Everything was just really... really tense. And considering the fact that, you know, old school ultra-rightists basically see the emperor as semi-divine, if not divine, period, and being at the same time that we were having this military treaty that seemed at the time to be a major inroad into Japan's sovereignty, people were a little on edge. So, on February 1st, 1961, a hardcore rightist by the name of Kazutaka Komori broke into the home of the president of Chokoron at the time, which was Hoji Shimanaka. Now, the thing was, Shimanaka was not actually in town at the time. He was out in another city on business, but his wife and maid was there. And so he decided to kill the maid and wound the wife. Straight up, using the same type of sword that Inajiro Asanuma's assassin used. Straight up, stabbed her with a sword, stabbed his wife with a sword. And, it was pretty much a political retribution in his mind because, you know, he had insulted the honor of the imperial family by printing Fukuzawa's story. He was, so obviously Komori was arrested, he was tried as an adult, he ended up getting a 15-year prison sentence, at the same time, there was another politician in the Japanese Diet at the time named Satoshi Akao, who was, again, one of those hard-right Yoku Dantai types. He actually got arrested because of this incident and Inajiro Asanuma's assassination. He ended up, you know, so there was two people that ended up going to prison and two people that died because of it. Because of this, Fukuzawa basically went into hiding and he was rarely seen in public after that. He continued to write and publish and his work continued to get, you know, occasionally made into film, and he did, like, because I also said he was a guitarist, he did put out an album in the mid-70s. But he was little seen after that. And after this incident, you will almost never see anybody talk about the royal family after that. Like, they may occasionally show up in, like, you know, the newspapers because they're meeting with the president or something. But you will never see, like, any kind of tabloid stuff or... Even people publicly criticizing, you know, all the money going to the royal family or anything like that. And it's pretty much because of this. Because it ended up getting a couple people killed.
Yeah.
And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Yay, I guess. Not really.
Yeah, like I said, man, people really forget that culturally Japan and the U.S. are very, very different in ways that absolutely frustrate both sides.
Yeah.
So Now it's time to start the show proper, and as always, we have to start with our asshole of the week. And, well, as everybody knows, the hurricane came in and basically wrecked the Carolinas, or the Carolina coast, at least, and pretty much a good chunk of the East Coast. It has, you know, it's caused a lot of flooding, property damage. A couple dozen people have been killed because of it. The damage is in the millions as far as money goes.
Yeah.
And everybody knows, like, I remember, because this actually, the same thing happened back when Katrina hit New Orleans years ago. Because what the thing is, when hurricanes hit, the hardest hit parts are usually the communities. You know, the urban, impoverished, or poor communities. Because when you live in an urban area, technically most of the stuff that you need is going to be within either walking or a short driving distance. But when the infrastructure gets wrecked by hurricanes or any severe weather like that, you know, your ability to access that stuff is greatly compromised. And so what has happened is that out of desperation, people will end up basically raiding any of the local stores they can get to get food, you know, diapers, stuff that, you know, you need to survive. And unfortunately, because of this, it's shown that there is a distinct racial bias when the media portrays it. Because again, this happened back again in Katrina. You would see white people getting, quote-unquote, getting supplies, you know, walking out of a, you know, like a 7-Eleven or a local grocery store with like a box of food or something, and then you'll see maybe, even at one case, the same area, the same store, a black person walking out with a box of food, and they're, quote-unquote, looting. And that comes down to our asshole of the week, which is this reporter who basically snitched on a bunch of desperate hurricane survivors that were getting supplies at a Family Dollar.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. For the record, and I want to point this out, the owners of that particular Family Dollar specifically called the police and told them, don't get involved. Just let them take it. All right? Yeah. You know, we're insured. We're going to get the insurance money. These folks are desperate. They need it. Just let them take it.
Yeah.
In fact, the funny enough, the local police actually put up a statement on Twitter where they said that they were, and I'm quoting here, unfortunately prevented from doing so by the owners.
Something don't add up there.
Yeah, and then they later still ended up arresting a couple of people for looting that store. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those desperate people's faces were plastered all over local TV as the reporter was there saying, you know it's illegal to loot, right? Why are you looting? It's wrong to loot. People, these people are starving, man.
Yeah.
Seriously. Look, I get that, you know, in a normal, regular bourgeois society, we'd be fine with, you know, it's like, okay, it's theft, it's wrong, call the police. But desperation is when all shit, when all bets are off. And like I said, in a situation like this where people are desperate and, you know, all their local infrastructure and your ability to get supplies has been greatly compromised, you're going to do everything that you can to make sure that you and your family are going to be able to get through the next few days.
Yeah.
Even if it, you know, means breaking a window and, you know, climbing into, again, a Family Dollar, which is like the bottom rung of cheap convenience stores. Which, again, that should be one of the big signs that this was a desperation move. Because if they were really out to get, like, serious loot or something, they'd, like, go into, like, a Walmart or a Macy's or something like that.
Yeah.
No, they went to the Family Dollar where, like, everything is, like, $2 to $3 at most.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's our asshole of the week. This basically, Miss Bartlett, decided to do a little barbecue Betty act on local television like that. So to get that bad taste out of our mouth, we have our hero of the week. And our hero of the week is that British diver who Elon Musk, you know, called a pedophile for no reason. Because he was the diver that was the head of it was that I was trying to remember, wasn't it? It was like a group of like Taiwanese like kids or something that were stranded inside this cave.
Yeah, they were a soccer team.
Yeah, soccer team.
And yeah, they were stuck under in this like underwater cave that it wasn't all that underwater when they got in there, but then tide came in and kind of stranded them. And so Elon Musk did his whole thing.
Where he tried to make it all about him.
Yeah, and had
look
the,
how cool and giving I am.
Yeah, like the remote controlled submarine to go in, and the diver's like, "No, we got it. Mm-hmm. Don't really need you here." And then he decided to call him a pedo.
Well, guess what?
Pedo
that guy became our
rapist.
Yeah, and he became our hero this week because he has officially filed suit against Elon Musk for libel.
Libel and slander in the U.S., and I think he's also going to do it in the U.K.
Yep.
And also, Elon just kind of exacerbated this by essentially daring him to do it. Especially like a month later, he's like, see, it's been 30 days, he hasn't done anything. So, you know. And, he said it was strange that, let's see, what's this guy's name? Vernon Unsworth.
Mm-hmm.
Very British name.
They
said it was strange Unsworth had not sued him over the comments. You know, I'm sure any lawyer will tell you, you know, if they're not suing you, you know, be happy about that for saying shit like that.
Yeah.
Let's see. They have a list of the various claims they're making.
Mm-hmm.
Musk's false and defamatory accusations falsely accuse Mr. Unsworth of being, one, a pedophile, two, a child rapist, three, a child sex trafficker, four, the husband of a 12-year-old child bride, and five, a liar.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's a lot of shit to say. And he very much was just like a 4chan asshole.
Yep.
Just going off on this because he lived in Thailand, which obviously has those things. People that do that stuff, unfortunately, but he does not do that.
No.
Just because he lives there doesn't mean he's just like those people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like we don't say everybody here is an asshole like Trump. No, but or anybody who lives in Toronto is just like was it Rob Ford or his brother?
Probably both of them.
Brother thing.
We're both crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like no, you don't accuse everybody generalized like that. But you know, he tried to use his platform as a rich guy as well as, you know, the head of SpaceX and Tesla and all this to slander this guy.
Yep.
And he finally said, you know what? Fuck you. I think he's only suing for $75,000.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's going to be anything other than that, but at least that's what he's doing right now.
I don't think it even goes to court.
Yeah. I would assume Musk will settle out for that.
Yeah.
Write him a check and say, yeah, let's forget this happened.
Yeah. Because he was high at the time.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he was very, very stoned.
I'm not talking about the Joe Rogan thing. He was, I think, tripping balls on acid at the time when he was tweeting those things. So
that's always a good time to go on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So
it's weird because, like, you know, on the one hand, I kind of have to applaud Musk for some of the stuff that he's done. But at the moment, like, he's, like, walking the line of insanity.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's kind of strange.
He's, like, the textbook example of what people don't like about Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
He's basically turning into another Howard Hughes very, very quickly.
He still has the opportunity to turn it around. So we'll see.
Yeah. But, all right. So, all right, so it's now time to start the show proper. Well, the proper show proper. And we started off with our very first big major story, which is the hearings on the nomination for Judge Brett Kavanaugh becoming a justice of the Supreme Court, and how it has gone completely off the rails. So I want to just remind everybody, a couple of weeks ago, people were pretty much sort of expecting this to be basically a done deal. You know, there's Republicans control both the House and the Senate. They control the executive branch. They pretty, pretty much this guy had all of the cards in his favor, you know.
Withholding information from Democrats.
Yeah, and the Republicans actively trying to obstruct getting information about it. And then out of nowhere comes this massive bombshell accusation from this woman, a professor named Dr. Ford, who accused him of, when they were teenagers, they were, partying. She was 15 at the time. He was 17. He took her into a bedroom, forced her down onto a bed, covered her mouth so she wouldn't scream, and basically molested her. Apparently, the clothes never came off, but he did it while he basically just sexually assaulted her while his apparent buddy, Mike Judge, was over there watching. So,
and I assume not that Mike Judge.
No, I think it's Mark Judge, not Mike.
Mark Judge, okay.
Yeah,
and I guess he was so drunk he couldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Worse, I guess.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this all came out. Initially, the Republicans are like, because Dianne Feinstein was the one that had a letter from her and withheld her name because she requested it. Republicans threw a fig. It's like, how can we take this seriously if we don't have a name? And as soon as they got a name, it's like, yeah, she's lying. See? Trying to character assassinate her. And yeah, it just became a huge shit show this entire week, because and sort of response to this, there was this whole thing with the letter with the 65 women that knew him when he was in high school, which he went to an all-boys school.
Yeah,
so that's a lot of women to know outside of
boys
school.
People did sort of point out that it seemed suspicious that they had this big list to give out almost on the hour that this accusation became public.
Yeah, and at around this time, they did not put essentially sign this letter after this happened. They signed it, right before. Then this all came out, in detail. And a reporter followed up and talked to them. Well, yeah, two that would still, defend him. It was like, oh, yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. Which that's
basically they all recanted, basically.
Except for two who are both named Mauda, MAUDA. Both had put out statements that were the same amount of sentences.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, did somebody just write both of these for them?
Probably.
Because it seems like they're not that different.
Yeah, suspiciously similar.
Yeah. And then I think
that's what Philip Newson has been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so some of those women actually knew Miss Ford, so they sort of knew who was making these accusations. Knew that I know about that. I'm not going to be defending him anymore. And this all brings up Anita Hill, who was essentially given the same treatment back in 1991.
And when Clarence Thomas was being nominated for the Supreme Court.
Basically,
for those who don't remember, Anita Hill was, I believe she was one of his, I can't remember, was she one of his secretaries or one of his...
Something like that, yeah.
Or one of, what's it called, an intern or something like that.
Yeah, she worked with him.
And he basically would do, there was lots of, foul sexual language, touching, and then one... The most infamous being the event she talked about having a can of Coca-Cola and then finding one of his pubic hairs on top of it. That was that's the iconic one, basically.
Yeah.
And she basically was, you watch some of that footage now, and it's pretty gross.
Yeah, I think Joe Biden was in the Senate at that time.
Yeah, he was probably basically one of the biggest offenders.
Yeah, I regret doing that.
Yeah. But of course, as everyone can
see, her life the same way that Republicans now are trying to ruin Ms. Ford's life.
But there's a big difference between 1991 and 2018.
What's
that? We have the internet for one thing.
Yeah.
And we also, you know, have the Me Too movement. You know, society is on her side.
Yeah.
This time.
Yeah, for the most part, because I know John Oliver sort of went over this whole thing at one point, and sort of noted, like, in similar fashion, like, there was a women's power movement at that time.
Yeah.
Sort of had, like, the Year of the Woman sort of thing that we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, worked for a while, and I assume we will be more successful now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a lot easier to organize this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
With the help of the internet, you know, there's lots of organizations now that are helping these various women that are trying to run for office and all that.
It's also easier to get this information now, too.
Yeah.
And to disseminate it through popular channels.
Yeah.
Because back in 1991, you would have basically had
TV
to fax all. Yeah.
See, back in 19... you would find out about her.
Yeah, or you had to, like, fax that shit.
You wouldn't have, like, a variety of opinions to be able to say, well, these ones seem suspicious. You would just trust your local paper and like, okay, well, they say she's, you know, she's wrong about this. Mm-hmm. I guess that might be what's happening. But yeah, that whole thing is sort of going on. And then yesterday, Trump, who had been suspiciously quiet, decides, hey, I'm going to step in now and talk.
And he did exactly what you thought he was going to do.
Yep, he basically said, you know, I know Brett Kavanaugh. Let's see, here's his tweet. I have no doubt that if the attack on Dr. Ford was as bad as she says, charges would have been immediately filed with the local law enforcement authorities. Law enforcement authorities are capitalized by either her or her loving parents. I ask that she brings those filings forward so that we can learn date, time, and place. Which, no, fuck you. There's a reason why women don't come out about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's because assholes like him are in power and giving her no trust.
Mm-hmm.
And she isn't, you know, bullshitting about this. Saying, well, you obviously have proof of this. It's like, no, she was probably a scared teenager.
Yeah.
Probably didn't tell her parents, at least not initially. Yeah, so he did exactly what she thought he would do. And now there's the whole thing about her testifying.
Mm-hmm.
Which has gone back and forth because Republicans want her to either not testify and be like, well, yeah, she's obviously lying. She's not going to testify.
Or they want to do an Anita Hill number on her.
Yeah. And
it's being said that she's probably going to testify this coming week, probably on Thursday. But they basically had to negotiate all this stuff up till the 11th hour.
And it's like she doesn't want Kevin to be anywhere near this.
Yeah.
Or at least not when she's there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she wants him to testify and then be kicked out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
For her. I think they don't want it to be televised, which is a really smart thing.
Yeah, that's actually really
I think just have
smart
one
on
reporter
her part.
To yeah. take pictures and such.
Yeah.
One photographer. Yeah, she's got a lot of death threats, so have security and all that.
This woman has had to flee her home because of her coming forward like this.
Yep. There's been a lot of shitty opinions from not only the right wingers you expect,
mm-hmm.
but also senators.
Yeah.
What's her face? Trump's communications director. What's her name?
Yeah. Conway.
Yeah, Kellyanne she's Conway. Even been supportive.
Yeah.
In a sense, it's like, wow. You know shit's bad when she's even coming out in support of
mm-hmm.
Ms. Ford.
Yeah.
I think she also wants Mark Judge to testify, and I think one other person.
Mm-hmm.
And no idea if that's going to be honored or anything like that, but yeah.
Mark Judge has said that he publicly said he has no plans to testify.
Yeah.
But if he does show up, they're probably going to have to subpoena his ass. So...
Yeah, and there's who's the guy, Elwan? the guy that was like very much going on about how, oh, she was raped by some other guy that looked like Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's like some suspicions that maybe he somehow had like PIs find out who this woman was first, because he had her name before it got publicly disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a shit show going on there as well. Yeah.
So I want to remind everybody that this still isn't a slam dunk.
But
Zoob could still totally get confirmed, even with all this.
Yeah, but however, now it's like the waters have been muddied quite a bit.
Yeah, and if somebody else, if he has like another victim, because if he's a sexual predator, obviously there's going to be another. If they come out, that's you can pretty much stick a fork in it.
Yeah, and I would say also that the interesting thing about all this is crap. I just forgot what I was going to say. I forgot what I was going to say. But yeah, it's definitely pay attention to the way your senators are talking about this.
Yeah, there has been talk of wanting to move just to essentially delay further hearings until the midterms come about, because you know, this has been sort of like a long-term project for the GOP, is getting another conservative justice onto the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's been like 20-odd years in the making. And if they screw this up, that's pretty much, that's it.
Yep.
I mean, you know, the demographic changes and just the way the country is going is not on their side.
Yeah.
But to move on from there, Canada is having a Supreme Court controversy of their own, and it's nowhere near as serious as ours is.
Ours is way more entertaining.
Yeah, because apparently one of their former chief justices is having a bra named after them.
Yeah, there's a company that manufactures lingerie and stuff like that, and they decided they're going to have a new line. Name it after noteworthy women in Canadian history. And so they named one after the former Supreme Court Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin. And yeah, people were like, this is kind of gross.
Not really.
Yeah. Like saying, this is kind of inappropriate, all that sort of stuff, and lobbied the company to reconsider. And I believe they have, especially after talking to Miss McLaughlin herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
Well, yeah, well, that would have been probably the first thing they should have done.
Yeah, like, talk to these people.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to name something after you. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. No? Oh, okay.
Like, we're going to name a pair of edible underwear after you. Is that fine? Hell no.
We're going to name it after the queen. Oh, yeah, that's what you want, edible underwear, and think about the queen.
Reminder that, you know, this is supposed to be what the norm is. No, everything that's going on down here right now is not normal. Not even close.
We're so far past normal at this point, it's... Yeah. I don't even remember what normal is like.
By the way, if you haven't noticed by now, that stuff about Brett Kavanaugh was pretty much the majority of the serious part of this show.
Yeah.
It was kind of a...
It was a hurricane of shit being spread across the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, okay, so next up, we now know who the first private tourist to go to the moon is going to be. SpaceX, of course, has been offering private trips to the moon, you know, open for public. The really, really rich public. We now know who the first one is going to be. It is going to be Japanese billionaire Yusaku Maezawa.
Yep, and I believe he bought all the seats on the first flight.
Because of course he did.
Yeah. So yeah, he... Let's see, what is he, who is he? Like, he's an art curator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, so the trip is not going to be until about 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's got some time. He says he wants to take about 6 to 8 artists around the world on this week-long trip.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's going to be on the SpaceX's Big Falcon rocket.
Yeah.
I assume the story came out this week to counteract the slander suit.
Probably.
Yeah.
Should probably point out that this isn't going to be a moon landing, as a lot of people like seem to think it is. No, it's
flying
just a
around the moon. Yeah. Go see the dark side of the moon, play some Pink Floyd.
And get high. Yeah. You know, if they actually do that, then, you know, more power to them.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll definitely give him that much. Yeah. But, yeah.
I like his Twitter account name. It's You Suck 2020. And that's English, you.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. So do we have, like, any information of when this is going to happen?
2023, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah. They have to, you know, actually get the rocket ready. And, of course, like, anybody who's going to be going has to do some rigorous training to be able to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, because people don't realize that going out into space, you basically have to make sure you're in tip-top shape when you go up there. Because, you know, your body does weird shit in zero gravity.
Yep.
Yep.
And when you no longer have the Earth's atmosphere protecting you.
Yep.
You know, you got all that radiation and crap. But all right, so next up. Just quick thing. I know this is a thing in the U.S., but Phil, up in Canada, do you guys have something akin to like the national broadcasting, alert system?
Yeah, yep. Like we're going off left and right yesterday.
Well, I mean something like if there was going to be like a nuclear attack or something like that.
Yeah, we do. We have the same kind of systems in place.
All right. So, at least once a month, they have to sort of do regular testing of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it usually happens at off hours of the day, usually when you're not suspecting it at all. Like, you know, you're listening to a really awesome song on the radio, and then all of a sudden, you know, that
scares
crap.
The shit out of you.
Yeah. Yeah, that crap was nightmare fuel for me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But in the age of the cell phone and smartphones now, they've kind of had to sort of retool some of it.
Yep.
And now FEMA has come up with what they call the presidential alert system, which they are basically suggesting that they're going to be testing next week on American cell phones.
Yeah. Well, this system has actually been in place for a long time. They just never bothered to actually test it, at least the presidential alert part of it.
Yeah.
So
it's usually just been automated stuff.
Yeah. So now there's going to be a presidential alert test. I think it's when is it? The 27th?
Yeah. That's going to be on Thursday. Yeah.
Thursday, yeah.
Which, by the way, like I said, that's supposed to be the day that Ms. Ford is going to be doing her, going to be having her hearing.
Yeah. Well, this was, like, announced quite a bit before that.
Oh, yeah.
Shit still happens, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Expect an all-caps tweet from, all-caps message from Donald Trump.
It's a witch hunt collusion.
Well, I think they're very specific about what it's actually going to be entail this time, so.
You're all going to die.
Yeah, it's going to be, this is a test, and then blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So.
All right. So, just on Thursday, don't panic.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, this is a really cool story. Some archaeologists in Egypt were doing one of the regular temple excavations that happened in the Valley of the Kings. Because believe it or not, they still find crap in there.
Yeah, it hasn't all been dug out yet.
Yeah, people have been going through that stuff since at least the 18th century, and they still find new stuff. And they were down there this week, and they discovered a sandstone sphinx statue. And was this the statue that was similar to the sphinx that are near the Great Pyramids?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. This one is much smaller.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, it's about 28 centimeters wide, 38 centimeters tall.
Oh wow, yeah, it is almost a complete, almost total resemblance.
Yep. Yeah, so they think it dates back to Greco-Macedonian Ptolemaic dynasty, from about 305 BC to 30 BC. And yeah, it's a pretty neat find.
Yeah, that's because like I said, that is almost a dead copy of the one in Giza. Yeah, that is fascinating.
Yeah, it shows some consistency there, so that's kind of interesting.
Well, you also have to remember that the one in Giza has been exposed to the elements for millennia, so...
Yeah, it's gotten the nose job.
Yeah, it's... That thing
still surprises me that Assassin's Creed Origins didn't have that thing fall off at some point during the story.
Well, I'm pretty sure the nose actually came off. I've heard that the nose actually came off fairly recently.
Yeah.
Like it was an accident at some point. I think it just crumbled under its own weight. Like, actually, you know what? Let me look it up, because I'm pretty sure that thing's nose. It says here, Wikipedia, the 1 meter wide nose on the face is missing. Examination of the Sphinx's face shows that long rods or chisels were hammered into the nose, one down from the bridge and one beneath the nostril, then used to pry the nose off towards the south. The Arab historian Al-Makirzi, writing in the 15th century, attributes the loss of the nose to iconoclasm by Sufi Muslim Muhammad Saim al-Dawr from the Khanqah of Sayyid al-Swada in AD 1378. Okay, there we go. So it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
They don't adhere to history that much.
Yeah.
Well, they try to, at least to an extent.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'm sure there wasn't some guy that murdered millions of people.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's really cool. All right, here's another great science story. The first hydrogen train in the world will be rolling out in Germany this coming Monday.
Yep. This was made by a French company, Alstom. They have two engines that will be producing diesel trains on the 100-kilometer route linking the towns of Cuxhaven and Buxtehude. It's about a 62-mile trip. They have 14 other trains that are set to be introduced across Germany by 2021. Let's see, they carry a hydrogen tank and fuel cells on the roof and produce electricity by combining hydrogen and oxygen. Excess energy is stored in the lithium-ion lithium batteries. And the engines can run for about 1,000 kilometers without refueling and reach about a maximum speed of 140 kilometers per hour, about 87 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Similar to diesel trains. So, yeah, these things, they give off steam and liquid water.
Yep.
I've definitely seen some of the local, like, transit buses using hydrogen. And, yeah, that's definitely a thing that will be happening more and more.
Yeah. Finally,
well, I mean,
one.
Europe has actually mandated the that, you know, they actually get rid of the combustion engine by, I think, 2025 at this point. So.
This is pretty much another nail in the coffin of petrol. So,
yep.
Man, we will all be better off when that finally happens.
Yeah. So, let's see. The state of Lower Saxony will pay about $95 million for the project. In line with their long-term initiative to drastically cut pollution, increase use of renewable fuel by 2050, France is expected to have their first hydrogen train by 2022. So, yeah, it's going to be spreading throughout Europe.
Yep.
Seems the UK, Netherlands, Denmark, Norway, Italy, and Canada are also looking into buying some of these trains.
Yeah. Awesome.
So, yeah, that's, I'm telling you, man, when we finally get off of petrol, our whole society is going to change in very significant ways.
Yeah.
I will not be surprised. It's like over here in the U.S., I will not be surprised if public transportation actually drastically expands.
Yeah.
By that time. And then eventually we'll end up in the universe of Red Barchetta. But
yeah, especially when you get a lot of electric and hydrogen, like buses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Red Barchetta, for those who don't know, is a song by Rush. It's about a guy in a future where the petrol engine has been outlawed, and this dude's trying to drive a Red Barchetta down the highway while he's being followed by flying robot cameras that are trying to catch him. But and next up of that in technology news, Amazon just announced a bunch of crap for Alexa that you're probably not going to get.
Except for one thing.
Yeah.
The voice-activated microwave is definitely coming to my place.
Yep.
And I'm not even kidding about that.
Yeah, $60. Yep. Shipping in November, November 14th.
Wait, $60?
Yeah.
Damn, that is very cheap.
It's supposed to be pretty much in line with like an average cheap microwave.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing I would need out of this is if you yell to shut up after you have something cooking in there, and you're like, "No, I'm just doing something. I'll be right back." And it's, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. I don't know how it is. I think I'm going to be picking up one of these because, for someone like me, programming microwave kind of a little difficult at times.
Yeah.
And just tell it to, cook this popcorn. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. It's part of their Amazon Basics line.
Yeah.
Of like cheap generic stuff.
Yeah.
They also got a bunch of other shit. There's a half a dozen new Alexa-enabled Echo speakers.
Yeah.
There's one for your car.
Yeah.
There's a smart plug that lets you connect Alexa to any appliance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's
a... The ones that actually didn't make much sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there are plenty of those already on the market that, support Alexa. So.
Yep, there's a $35 device that can turn any speaker into an Alexa-controlled speaker.
Mm-hmm. That will probably do pretty well.
There's an analog wall clock that talks to Alexa.
Yeah, that might actually be finding its way here as well.
There's like a part of their Ring security system that also has Alexa integration, as well as a DVR.
Yeah.
That talks to an updated Echo Show. They also have new Echo speakers.
Yeah.
As well.
Shows. They updated the Echo Dot to look more like the regular Echo now, just shorter.
Yeah.
Lots of fun stuff in there. Oh, yeah, the Echo subwoofer that's in there as well. You can get that.
Yeah.
The Echo Amp, the Echo Link. I think we already talked about that one.
Yep.
Yeah, lots of stuff. Yeah. And I'm actually surprised that, that microwave, in fact, made sense to me. So, yay.
Yeah. And now we got another story. This one's from Spotify. And this may be like a death knell of music industry as we know it. Spotify is currently testing tools that's going to allow indie artists to upload their own music without a label.
Yep. So currently, you need some sort of distributor or label to go through for Spotify.
Yeah.
And this sort of allows an indie band or an artist to sort of do that on their own. You got a nice dashboard and all that lets them keep track of their payments and how they're doing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It seems like something that could be really big for them.
Yeah, like I said, this is pretty much going to be, if they can get this technology and distribute it to the point that it's very easy to get your hands on, that's pretty much the death of the record industry.
Yeah.
Like, that's the point when, that's just it. It's done. Pull the plug. There ain't no coming back after that. Because the gatekeeping that has basically been the sole reason they've been able to keep in existence all these years is gone.
Yeah. Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if you get to the point where, like, places like Amazon will, you can upload your music and just have them print out CDs for people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know they do that for some DVD stuff.
Yeah, they do that for some DVD stuff, like some really obscure stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of like Nickelodeon's like full series stuff has been like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can get that sort of service for music, That will definitely be another easy way for their people to sort of get out of the label system.
Yeah.
And make the labels actually have to try to earn the ability to sort of promote these artists.
Yeah.
Versus needing the label to get the promotion and get the circulation and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not ready yet. It's going to be a while. They're still like testing it out.
Yeah, I think they've they've given it to some to a limited amount of people at this point.
Yeah.
To try it out, but it hasn't widely rolled out yet.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have a time frame they're looking at. It's probably going to be next year, I'm assuming. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
They have a mailing list for the ability to get into this program.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Sort of test it out and all that.
Yeah. So if you're an indie artist, sign up for that list and you'll get notified as soon as it's available.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, folks in Australia are getting fruit and finding out that there are needles in them.
Yeah, this
so it turns out. Been yeah, so apparently it wasn't the Halloween candy. It was the fruit this whole time.
Yeah, it's mainly been strawberries, but starting to spread around. I think it's also partly copycat people.
It's possible.
Because there are sewing needles that people are finding, not like medical needles.
Mm-hmm.
Which has even prompted some of the craft stores to shut down their needles, like not sell them anymore. Until they get to the bottom of what the hell's been going on. Because now people, basically if you're buying strawberries, you need to be cutting them up.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of goes against why people like strawberries.
Yeah.
You should be able to just shove them in your mouth.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Of course, the question is, why?
They're still trying to figure out why.
Yeah.
Why they're doing this, where they're doing it, how.
I mean, the other week when we talked about, the Tylenol cyanide case, It's just because one sick individual wants to cause chaos. So,
yeah, it's like they're talking about to a criminologist here. You want to think about how someone's justifying these actions to themselves. Perhaps they've been upset by a particular grower or business, want to take some kind of revenge. But you could also equate that possibility of forms of terror that use cars and planes as weapons. It's obviously not the same thing, but it's sort of a small scale version of that.
Yeah.
He also said it. Or she also said it could be an act of madness or both, or madness or badness, or both. They could just be acting out against something in their personal lives, acting on some delusion. They feel compelled to do something, but not out of a sense of criminality. But they've also say that there may also be some copycats, because they found them in mangoes, something like that. There's some other fruit that people have been finding them in. This is just a very weird thing that's been going on. It's affecting a lot of growers now.
Mm-hmm.
People are not stocking these strawberries. And so there are definitely campaigns going on about what they call smash straws.
Mm.
And smash in Australian is eat.
Yeah.
So continue to support your growers. Huh. Just obviously cut them up a little bit before you eat them.
Yeah. That is weird.
Yeah, people are surprised, but the fruit trade is really cutthroat. Be surprised.
Wasteful business as well.
Yeah. I mean, people have actively toppled governments because of the fruit trade. So,
yeah.
Next up, and something's quite less, hazardous. As everybody knows, Hurricane Florence came in, basically wrecked a good chunk of the East Coast. Except for Florida. Florida.
Left a present there.
Yeah. Florida, weirdly enough, actually got out of all this unscathed, which, Florida must be feeling like Kenny in the first season of South Park during the Christmas special where he didn't die. But
you want to say why they got good news?
Yeah, because Florence left them a little present. After Florence came through, people started finding gigantic bundles of marijuana washing up on the Florida shore.
Yep. Let's see, where was this at? St. John's, Flagler, and Volusia counties in the middle of the state, where people have found these giant marijuana packages. Yeah, about 100 pounds of marijuana since the... So, yeah, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, a couple million dollars of marijuana there.
Yep. Which they say here, possession of between 20 grams and 25 pounds is a felony. For a sentence up to 5 years in prison. So this is quite a bit more than that. And kind of the weird part of the story is, obviously, people take pictures and videos of this stuff showing up. And there's been a couple people that have been arrested for taking it. Essentially, people snitching on them with their social media posts. There's a bundle holding 23 packets of marijuana washed up on Ormond Beach. They don't know where the drugs came from. It was like some sort of capsized boat or plane drop or something like that. With Florence also, you know, pushing stuff around. It's a very weird thing.
Yeah, because it was packed too.
So I'm wondering if, like, was this like trafficking, or is it possible that this was just like a crop that was going up towards Canada or something like that?
I assume it would be probably trafficking.
Yeah.
Somebody trying to get some stuff out of the country.
I wish it wasn't, but that's probably the case.
Yeah.
No. So has anybody actually tried to, like, have they gotten reports of people, like, you know, finding these packages and just running with them? Or
I think people try to take stuff out of them.
Oh.
And that's where people have gotten identified and arrested.
Yeah. Mm. Of course, you know, this would be a much less of a problem if, you know, the state of Florida just decided to bite the bullet, legalize marijuana.
Yeah.
But can't do that.
They could potentially get going in that direction in the fall.
Yeah.
Yep.
The election.
And Rick Scott will probably do everything in his power to stop it. But
that's the way the winds are blowing, folks.
I mean, we've got an entire country to the north of us that has legal recreational marijuana. We've got at least, what is it, like 8 or 9, maybe 10 states in the union who have it now, too. It's going to happen one way or another. But speaking of other weed-influenced news, Coca-Cola has announced that they're experimenting with a cannabis-infused drink.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is pretty much going to be the, I mean, I'm guessing that they're basically holding off on actually, like, making this into a regular product you can buy at a store until, you know, marijuana becomes legal nationwide.
Yeah. Or they'll sell it here.
They could sell it up in Canada. But see, the problem with that is because we share a border with you guys, if anybody tried to, you know, tried to go into, say, New York, it would basically mean that they could be carrying a can of something that might actually be illegal.
So, like, the story with this is they are in talks with a local producer in Canada, Aurora Cannabis, which would be sort of a pain relief drink. They have not really said anything about this much, but along with many others in the beverage industry, we are closely watching the growth of non-psychoactive cannabidiol as an ingredient in functional wellness beverages around the world.
Yep.
And yeah, so it's kind of a thing they're looking at doing.
Keep your eye on that. Of course, if it becomes generally available over here, I'll pick a can up and let you know how it is.
Yeah. All right.
Maybe I'll drink it on the show and see what happens.
And next up, the CBC has been investigating Ticketmaster. As it turns out that Ticketmaster basically does everything it possibly can to rip you off on ticket prices.
Yep.
We kind of knew that, but...
Yep.
Yeah, sort of the key things they found, this is centered around a Bruno Mars concert that I believe is happening today in Toronto. So yeah, they found out there's three things they do to alter the prices. First off, they don't list every seat they have when it begins. So yeah, they sell, let's see, within 5 minutes of tickets going on sale at noon on February 16th, Pier the Arena was nearly sold out. Most of what remained were tickets priced at $500 or up to $2,500 for a spot in the front row. As fans scrambled, Ticketmaster ripped a page from the proverbial scalper handbook, beginning increasing prices for some seats. And so they show some of these, like $800 up to about $900, $725 up to $800, $650 up to $700, $555, $700, $211 to $229. And so you don't really notice these price increases because they don't give you that information. Mm. You just see the current price.
Yeah.
You don't really realize, oh, that was, you know, $50 cheaper an hour ago. Yeah. And yeah, so they found about 120 non-platinum tickets that increased about $20 after the sale began. Yeah, so platinum tickets are tickets that are dynamically priced up and down based on demand. It's like an actual feature they have.
Yeah.
Which, okay, that's just like, hey, we're just going to officially screw you. And obviously Ticketmaster declined the request for an interview to talk more about this. They did put out statements saying the prices are set by the seller. So blaming Bruno Mars for this and the venue.
Yeah. The rumor come out. Does Bruno Mars is scalper?
Yeah.
I think so.
Bruno Mars is price gouging?
Nope. Yep. And trick number two. Yeah, not all tickets go on sale initially. 90 minutes into the sale, Ticketmaster started releasing hundreds more tickets for sale between $99 and $159, including a slow dribble of seats from 8 additional second sections to the side behind the stage that weren't initially available to fans.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds more tickets were added in June, July, and August. And yeah, the class action lawyer that is launching this lawsuit against Ticketmaster says they're artificially driving the price up. They're artificially giving the impression of a high demand. Yeah, that definitely happens. Trick number three, double dip fees on scalp tickets. So yeah, Ticketmaster allows people to sell tickets secondhand on their own sites, and they will actually, Ticketmaster charged $350,000 in service fees for the Bruno Mars concert, and nearly doubled that revenue with resales. And the company, which for years publicly denounced scalpers, now runs a verified resale program. Let scalpers sell directly on Ticketmaster's site, and they collect fees on those tickets that they already paid fees on. So, for example, Ticketmaster collected $25.75 on a $209.50 ticket on the initial sale. If the owner posts it for resale for $400 on Ticketmaster, the company stood to collect an additional $76 on the same ticket. So for this $200 ticket, they get about $100 if it's resold.
Yeah. That's skeezy.
Yep. CBC counted more than $4,500 Bruno Mars resale tickets on Ticketmaster, meaning that if Ticketmaster sells every seat in the arena for Saturday's show, it would collect an additional $350,000 in service fees, plus $308,000 in fees on scalp tickets for a double dip total of $658,000. So yeah, now you know more about how they screw you frontwards, backwards, and to the side. All over the place.
Yeah.
Hey.
It's like, you know, if you were buying tickets from Ticketmaster, you already knew that you were getting screwed. Now you just know how.
Yeah.
So
all right. Yeah. And now begins the entertainment portion of the show. Because this week we got the first trailer for Mary Poppins Returns. Which looked really good.
Yeah, I've never watched the original.
Yeah, I've watched the original several times.
Yeah.
And it legit looks really good. Basically, the sort of story here is that if you remember the original kids from the first movie, they're all grown up adults. They've had families of their own and children. And Mary suddenly just shows up again. And she hasn't aged a day. Well, obviously, it's a different actress, but... She pretty much looks exactly as she remembered her from.
Yeah.
And also Lin-Manuel Miranda is there.
Is he the chimney sweep?
Yep.
Okay.
And he
it's really
actually,
weird seeing him as like a British guy because you know him
you
so much.
You would say that, but here's the thing. His British accent is definitely better than Dick Van Dyke's. So.
Yeah. I would not be surprised by that.
I also, and apparently Dick Van Dyke is in this movie. So.
Yeah, he has a little cameo in there, which I've seen people pull that, like a gif of that out. It's like, when you're 90 years old, then you don't give a fuck.
Yeah. but it...
Yeah, so he's playing like a banker, I guess, old man banker type. Yeah.
Yeah, that it. Like I said, it legit looks good. And remember, Miranda's not only in the movie, he also worked on the music. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And we also got our first trailer for Captain Marvel, and all of those who support the punching of old ladies rejoiced.
Yeah, that was like the one thing that people came out. It's like, why is she punching an old woman?
Because she's a Skrull. Yeah. Like, that's the most obvious solution.
Like, that's sort of why they're introducing her. They're also introducing the Skrull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to go through, like, the whole ordeal of... Because, like, the whole thing they did in the comics back in, I don't know, when, like, the 90s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, they had all of the groups, all of the heroes, pretty much, in the series. And the idea was you don't know who is the original hero who has been essentially impersonated by a Skrull.
Yeah.
Either killed or kidnapped, taken away. And sort of this whole plot of trying to save the world from these aliens that have taken over all the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume they're going to be a little bit smaller scale here. She drops in from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously know that in the trailer because they land on a Blockbuster video store.
Yeah.
And there's only two of those left in the country. So
no, there is one of them.
Oh, one left. Okay.
Yeah.
It's in Alaska.
Yeah, I'm sure that happening probably made it really easy to get the signs and all that. Mm-hmm. Those probably got sold off and people probably in the movie business like, oh shit, we can buy those on the cheap. In case we got to make anything in the 90s and make sure you know it's the 90s.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna guess this movie either takes place before Infinity War or concurrent with it.
Well, I think it's gonna be quite a bit before.
Yeah, because Infinity War and the Guardians of the Galaxy, all that stuff is supposed to be contemporary. So, this is gonna
be something of a prequel for most of that of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yep.
Okay, we kind of have to because
so we see Fury, Nick Fury, who's 90s-ass Sam Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very Sam Jackson.
With a very fake hairline.
Mm-hmm.
It looked good, though, I gotta say.
Furthermore, as far as more Marvel stuff from Disney, they're considering limited series for their streaming service involving Loki and the Scarlet Witch.
Yep. The interesting thing is they are going to have those original actors in it, too. Mm-hmm. So they're going to have Tom Hiddleston and Elizabeth Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
And these are going to be a limited series, about 6 to 8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely going to be high budget compared to like their other Marvel shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is going to be pretty big if they get the details all nailed down. And they're actually good.
Yeah. Well, I got to do something with them because, I mean, those actors are still on contract and their characters aren't exactly doing anything anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least for a good while.
Yep.
Great. Well, and finally, they're also looking to do a female superhero-focused drama for ABC.
Yep. This is with the writer for the Wonder Woman movie?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be doing like a drama, and people are speculating about what heroes could be.
Yeah,
I don't think they have anything specific in here that it's that is being tipped in this news, but just that they're doing it,
mm-hmm.
especially as like a replacement for like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm not sure who you would.
I think I saw some people say like Ms. Marvel might be a good place to introduce her in this series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Possibility.
Like some smaller heroes like that.
right. Next up, and this is, I think we've already kind of known about this, but now it's basically been confirmed. Jordan Peele will be the host and narrator for the revival of The Twilight Zone.
Yep, yes. Got a new little teaser trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So we're showing this. It's going to start next year. Jordan Peele's production company is going to be working on this.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it sort of talked about how, see, the realization for me was that it was an opportunity to attempt to continue with Sterling's mission.
Yeah.
If we approach it without ego and sort of bow to Sterling, that will hopefully suffice for our fellow Twilight Zone fans, but also bring back a show that I think is needed right now.
Yeah.
Because it's a show that's always helped us look at ourselves, hold a mirror up to society.
Yeah. People are wondering, what does he mean by, you know, keeping to Sterling's vision? If you've ever watched old school Twilight Zone, it gets very political and social,
mm-hmm.
in the best way possible. It's had stuff dealing with environmentalism, the Cold War, McCarthyism, racism, prejudice, all that stuff. So, yeah, if he can channel all of that into a modern context, he's got a damn good show on his hands.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we've seen him do it with Get Out, so we know he can do it.
Yeah,
That's definitely going to be something to look forward to. And let's... There's
just so much good TV coming out lately.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And Ultimate Story for the Night, Veronica Mars... There's a revival series. It's ordered for Hulu, and it's coming out next year.
Yep. Yeah, so Kristen Bell is going to be returning. I think the creator, Rob Thomas, is also on it. It's going to be 8 episodes. And, yeah, it's going to be cool to see this in action, see what they do.
Yeah, well, Hulu has been doing some pretty good stuff lately, so.
Yeah.
Well, apart from The Handmaid's Tale, which is utterly and amazingly depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't get, no, it's a good show, but holy crap.
Yeah, it will make you hate yourself.
Yeah. It will pretty much wreck you for the following week.
Yep.
And finally, and this was probably like the big story of this week, the original creators of Avatar The Last Airbender are teaming up back again, and they're going to be doing a live-action Avatar The Last Airbender series for Netflix.
Oh, boy.
They're basically doing what they can to wipe the memory of Shyamalan from the collective consciousness.
Yeah, it's probably not hard.
Yeah, most people have tried to block that out anyway.
Yeah, so this will be out next year?
Yep.
Our production's going to start next year.
Oh. Okay, so probably a 2020 show then.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably late 2019, probably early 2020.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, watch the Nostalgia Critics episode he did on the Avatar movie, because it basically points out just everything that is wrong with that god-awful adaptation. You know, just the complete lack of imagination, the whitewashing, the wanting to play it so safe that you completely wreck the story. It's just, it's
hiring M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, it's just, God, it's hot garbage. Yeah, so I do believe we got a show, folks.
Yes, Lord.
All right, so I would like to remind all of our listeners that if you have a question, a comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can send it in to us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got a link down in the bottom of the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little piece of silly unscriptedness at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, basically any place where podcasts like ours can be downloaded and listened to. So, with that, I have been one of your hosts, Brandon Perkins, and fourth Luke Lunalfo and Chris Deloche, saying good night, sleep tight.